All right, we are in Call to Stand Apart, page 53, very bottom of it, which says, among the children of Israel who were carried captive to Babylon at the beginning of the 70-year captivity, were Christian patriots, men who were as true as steel to principle, who would not be corrupted by selfishness, but who would honor God at the loss of all things. Isn't that something? In the midst of all that, in the midst of all the corruption in Israel, there were still good people in Israel. And because of the idiocy of their leaders, those good people ended up in Babylon. But that's why the Lord more or less worded his warning the way he did through Jeremiah. If you stay in a city, you're going to die by death, famine, famine, disease, or sword. But if you leave the city, you will live, but you will live under Babylonian rule for 70 years, right? And, of course, the obedient people of God are going to do what's right. It's just like in 70 A.D., you know? They left. And so, you know, and then the rest, of course, is history, as we know. And then later on, 70 years later, you see Nehemiah walking in there, rebuilding the walls, and then Sanballat coming along, you know, because they couldn't much deal with what was about to happen. So anyway, it goes on to say, in the land of their captivity, these men were to carry out God's purpose by giving to heathen nations the blessings that come through a knowledge of Jehovah. And so there you have it again. Not only is it's a little difficult. Sometimes walking with the Lord can be a little difficult, but like David more or less said, paraphrasing when, Samuel. Yeah, Samuel was still alive at the time. So Samuel anointed David as king while Saul was still king, right? And more or less in today's words, asked David, well, you got a problem with that? And David says, how can I be troubled in any way if it's our Father's will? It can be difficult, yeah. But it's always going to have a good outcome. So even if you end up behind bars, he's got a reason for it. And I believe that's one of the reasons he had that case of mine dismissed many, many years ago when I was walking down that long hallway. It's the biggest courtroom in Illinois. They call it the Bridgeview Courthouse for some weird reason, but it's in an industrial area of Chicago Ridge, just off Harlem Avenue, and it's like a four-story building, and it's got, I think, 30 or 40 huge courtrooms in it, and mine was the last one at the end of the row on the first floor. And I've told you all about this before, but I just believe that I didn't want to go to jail, of course. Who does? Especially, I have a wife, and at that time, all eight. We had all eight. Lee was a baby. So this is right before we started keeping Sabbath. That's right, because we had just started a little home church. That's what I told the judge. We had a little home church going. But I told the Lord, if this is where you want me to go, you know, because I know, you know, what it says in the Word about Jeremiah having his difficulties, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Isaiah, Jonah, whoever. But, no, she had to be born by then, Fran, because we weren't in the 1,011-day house no more when I had to report monthly to the Bridgeview Courthouse. And I kept telling him, says, look, I can't. I'll send it to you. I'll send you the $50 every month in the mail. And then the one time he says, well, you got a new judge. You have to appear. No, it wasn't electric. No. No, this was an AT&T thing. And so I had to literally drive for two and a half hours to get to that courtroom. And then she sprung all the bad news on me when I was there. But I remember I thought I was telling the Lord, I says, look, if you want me to go, I'll go. I don't want to go to jail. It's a scary place to be. Been there many, 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 many times, of course, but usually just county lockups. But this was talking, you know, regular jail. But if somebody in there needs to hear the truth, as you would have me share it, then I got to go. How can your will trouble me? You know, and so, but then, of course, it was case dismissed and everything went right. But we still, as a matter of fact, we're still evangelizing people in prisons. I mean, I just sent out some stuff the other day because we have, now it's actually a guy that used to be part of our, well, he was never actually a member. His name's Dennis, too, but it's not that bad guy. Although he's got his own problems. He's in prison in California, and he gets the newsletter and stuff, and he shares it with the people, and he's got, now we've got a bunch of stuff that we're sending out there. And then Randy, if you remember him from Kentucky, Randy was a prison guard for years, And we actually had we must have had 30 or 40 people that did the studies in his prison. And I mean, he was just handing it out. And that's why I believe that's one of the reasons they let him go, if you will. You know, he was a Sabbath keeper and stuff like that. But Randy, yeah, big guy. Huge man. And I could see him being a prison guard. No problem. Anyway, she goes on to say that they were to be his representatives. You know, and Brother Chase is actually touching on this Sabbath. In fact, he's preaching this week. I mean, I've already put up the notice that the sermon is called Running from God, because a lot of people do that. I mean, I did it for 2 years. I was doing a 9-to-5 job, of course, and doing the ministry for 17 years. But about year 15, the Lord told me to go full-time in the ministry, and, you know, I figured, okay, I don't ask for donations. I never will. I didn't trust him. This is about a year before the Twin Towers went down, and then the year after, yeah, I went full-time because he answered a question. But that's a whole other story. But if you put your foot forward, oh, there were about 50 to 75 prisoners? Okay, Fran. Yeah, oh, that's right. You did all of that. I mean, I didn't. I kept seeing him come in, and I'm trying to picture the numbers, but it was a big amount. It was, you know, and she graded, you graded all those, right? And we used to send out diplomas and stuff like that, but, you know, we don't have one of those seals. We should get a stamp seal to do that. I'd like to send out baptismal certificates, but we're not Catholic, but still, the Lord has it recorded in a book where it can't be erased. Assuming you don't do a 1.5 triple gainer out of his hand, that is. Because you are carved now in the palm of his hand if you are baptized and have accepted him as Savior. Or even if you're not baptized and you've accepted him as Savior. Because eventually you'll get under the water. And if not, don't worry about it. If the circumstances are such that you never are able to get baptized and you tried, well, one of the reasons Jesus was baptized is for those that can't. And case in point, thief on the cross was never baptized, and Jesus said he will be in heaven. So again, she says, they were to be his representatives. Never were they to compromise with idolaters. Their faith and their name as worshipers of the living God, they were to bear as a high honor. And this they did. Now think about that. Could you imagine Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel, after being in a public school in America for 4 or 5 years, especially when you get into high school? I mean, my early years in the public school system, not counting the Catholic parochial garbage, that was just terrorism. I had bad dreams for well over 2 decades after leaving. My parents pulled us out of the Catholic school in 4th grade, so I was 9. And I had bad dreams for, I'd say 15 years, maybe 20, about what those nuns, how they terrorize you. I mean, I was a little kid, I was scared, and they took advantage of that. But even there, and in the grade schools, you know, with the bullies and stuff like that, I mean, I got beat up, but I didn't get beat up that much. The biggest fear that I had was the constant fear of getting beat up because of, the tough guys, the bullies would come around because I was a tiny kid at that time. Hey, smack you upside the back of the head and give you a look like, come on, it was a constant terror. And so they were beating me up physically and mental. Well, the mental thing, they were beating me up daily on that. Constantly, but once in a while, yeah, they'd lay into me for just because I guess they needed to sharpen their knuckles or something. I don't know. But it wasn't until I got into high school where you actually have a society of young people where it is literally designed by Satan incarnate, and it destroys people to the point where peer pressure is so overwhelming that I wonder. No, I don't wonder now when I think about it, because I remember there were some Christian kids in the very few, I think there were 4, and 3 of them had the last name of Summerson. Now, granted, they were Lutheran, and the other kid, I can't remember what his name was, but there were 3 sisters that were the last name was Summersons, and they went to a church down the block from where I lived, that had a ramp that I used to fly off of with my car. they weren't affected by it all. So I could see Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel handling it in today's school system, but the overwhelming majority, no. And that's why I could see what went down as it went down with Daniel and his friends, where they were the only ones. I mean, think about it, because when they brought those people in from Israel, when they besieged the city, only four of them said, we can't eat that which our God says defiles us. Yet all their neighbors and friends and cousins and whatever were chawing down on it like it was a party. I mean, none of them thought twice about it. And I would think a lot of it had to do with it was fear. You know, like with the Catholicism today. The only reason people are Catholic today is because their ancestors were so fearful. They didn't want to get burned at the stake. So she says, in prosperity and adversity, they honored God. And God honored them. Okay, and so the fact, she says, that these men, worshippers of Jehovah, were captives in Babylon, and that the vessels of God's house had been placed in the temple of the Babylonian gods, was boastfully cited by the victors as evidence that their religion and their customs were superior to the religions and customs of the Hebrews. And you know they were gonna run with that every chance they could, because when they take over in every way. It's not just political, it's spiritual, mental, physical, all of it. They do what they can. They want to glorify their nation. It's to this day. I mean, it's the same way. Unless, of course, your nation has a shadow government and it's being destroyed from internally, like America, then, you know, the patriotic thing is all soaked up in Monday Night Football and all the sitcoms. No one wants to bother with it, but I digress. She goes on to say that, yet through the very humiliations that Israel's departure from him had invited, God gave Babylon evidence of his supremacy, of the holiness of his requirements, and of the sure results of obedience. And boy, was it done in a graphic way. We know about Daniel and the lion's den, and we certainly know long before that went down, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you know, had their day in the furnace. And then, of course, Daniel with the defining of all the dreams. You know, or even Joseph in Genesis. I mean, that to me is, especially the dream where, oh, no, that was Daniel, yeah, with the dream that he had a dream himself to understand it because the king forgot it. So she says, and this testimony he gave, as alone it could be given, through those who were loyal to him. Among those who maintained their allegiance to God were Daniel and his three companions. Illustrious examples of what men may become who unite with the God of wisdom and power. From the comparative simplicity of their Jewish home, these youth of royal line were taken to the most magnificent of cities and into the court of the world's greatest monarch. Now, when I was a kid and my parents got us that Encyclopedia Britannica, one of the first things I noticed when I stepped into the high school was how the Babylonian hanging gardens weren't mentioned. But yet they were all over the Encyclopedia Britannica. And that always amazed me, because they were saying that wall with the aqueduct was 200 feet high, and it had these trees and these bushes and these vines, and they were loaded down with everything from fruit to flowers hanging off the side of that huge wall wherein the aqueduct. I mean, they needed that kind of height to bring that kind of pressure in the water. I mean, it's just like a water tower out here. But you got to know that aqueduct was also part of, I wouldn't put it past Nebuchadnezzar using it as his own personal pool, you know, swimming in it and stuff. But I don't know if that'd be, well, I would imagine he would have some kind of footing to where you won't go too deep, because his kids, I mean, the undertow would kill you. So anyway, she goes on to say that Nebuchadnezzar spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and of the king's seed, and of the prince's children, in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and cunning in knowledge, and understanding science, and such as had the ability of them to stand in the king's palace. You know, cream of the crop. He's the king. He doesn't want no problems, you know. It's just like, and think about that too, the basic reality of that. Nothing that defileth shall enter therein, New Jerusalem too. So you can see a lot of similarities between the way mankind rules and the way God rules. And well, that reminds me of a decal I had on my back window in my car. God rules. But it was... Because I, you know, you could see that now. Yeah, okay, mankind goes a little bit overboard. I mean, look at the United States. We've got thousands of laws to try to control the people. Well, you know, more or less. But you know, we've had a socialist format in this nation. We've had dictators as presidents for decades now, but it hasn't really gotten to the point where even the common man can see it until Obama, of course. But it's amazing how many laws are in this nation where there's only 10 in the kingdom of heaven. Look at the wisdom there. It just blows them off the chart. But then you also have the loyalty and love factor. Whereas I can't think anybody in this nation, even the Democrats, wouldn't be loyal to a Democratic president, whereas the Republicans wouldn't even be loyal to a Republican president. They're all in it for the money. The minute he steps out of line and causes them to lose a couple of bucks, yeah, assassinate the guy. So going on... She goes on to say, and of course, quoting from Scripture, "Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Seeing in these youth the promise of remarkable ability, Nebuchadnezzar determined that they should be trained to fill important positions in his kingdom, that they might be fully qualified for their life work. He arranged for them to learn the language of the Chaldeans, and for 3 years to be granted the unusual educational advantages afforded princes of the realm." Think about that, 3 years. So the gray matter back then was considerably better tuned, if you will, and I'm not saying it's because of creation and whatnot. You know, the pollution of today, or everything from the pollution down to the diet as well as sinfulness, because we know how sin disrupts everything, even to the point of the flood. And but you also have the satanic agencies that are running amok because of the time span that's left. And so they know that, well, Satan knows he hasn't got a lot of time left. But today, you get a 3-year education, you know, well, even today, you can get an 8 years, you can get a master's degree and still can't get a job out here. But I can imagine they would learn quicker, you know. But that'd be neat, you know, to live in that time. But she goes on. "The names of Daniel and his companions were changed to names representing Chaldean deities. Great significance was attached to the names given by Hebrew parents to their children. Often these stood for traits of character and that the parent desired to see develop in the child. And you could also see this in the way that Joseph named his boys and the way, you know, Jacob named his." And you could actually see the storyline in there too, which I put it on the site some years ago because of the Yah cult people. Now, I don't see anything wrong with using the name Yahweh or Yeshua or, you know, or even Himashiach. What is that? Yeshua, Himashiach? Yeah, something like that. Those are beautiful names. Those are real names, and it's probably the more accurate of the names, but even though you can't really pronounce Yahweh because it's spelled YHWH, there's not even any vowels in there. It's an unpronounceable name. It's mostly just a bowing of the head kind of a thing. But mankind always wants to put his 2 cents in, so you got some vowels in there. And so they come forward many, many years ago declaring that you must use those names. And one of the beauties of the scriptures was to show them, first of all, you can't pronounce it, so you're saying that our name that we use, is, you know, for Jesus is man-made, but yet your name for Yahweh and Yeshua is also man-made. Look at the hypocrisy there. Plus, look at the names of all the 12 tribes and how it spells out the story of salvation. Or look at all the names of Christ himself. So if you give him one name, put him in a box, oh, well, then you're like the rest of the denominations out there. We prefer to have him complete control over everything. So going on, it says, "The prince in whose charge... the captive youth were placed, gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar, I guess, and to Hananiah, Shadrach, to Mishael, received, you know, of Meshach, and Azariah of Abednego. The king did not compel the Hebrew youth to renounce their faith in favor of idolatry," which would have been a problem. They wouldn't even eat that stuff to defile himself, but if he would have stepped up with that, then yeah, of course it'd be a problem. "But he hoped," she says, "to bring this about gradually. by giving them names significant of idolatry, by bringing them daily into close association with idolatrous customs and under the influence of the seductive rites of heathen worship, he hoped to induce them to renounce the religion of their nation and to unite with the worship of the Babylonians. But the Lord had a whole different idea, didn't he? They were trying to use deception, whereas the Lord was going to use gentle truth. He wasn't going to shove it down their throat. He was going to show them day by day. And of course, you saw this with the dreams, the fire, and the lion's den. And other things, of course. But so going on, it says, at the very outset of their career, there came to them a decisive test of character. It was provided that they should eat of the food and drink of the wine that came from the king's table. In this, the king thought to give them an expression of his favor and of his solicitude for their welfare. But a portion having been offered to idols, the food from the king's table was consecrated to idolatry, and one partaking of it would be regarded as offering homage to the gods of Babylon. So this is one of the reasons my wife and I stopped going to, we used to go to the smorgasbord thing because that's the cheapest way to go. And they had this one Chinese restaurant out there in Lafayette, and it's still there. And I never even put two and two together when I walked in and saw this gigantic Buddha statue. I just thought, it's just probably motif. You know, something like make an atmosphere, you know, and have all the weird music that they have from the Eastern religions. And but the one day, so I guess the Lord made it clear to me the one day when we walked in, a young couple walked in along with us. But they stopped. They had a baby. The dad had the baby in his arms. He leaned forward, bowed to the statue. The mom leaned forward, bowed to the statue. And then they took the kid and brought the kid forward. And the child went forward and kissed the statue. And then I start to think, okay, maybe this is a place to steer clear for Christians, because they are offering all things to a false god. And that's why we don't use the gas station in a small town near here. Muslims own it. And Luke happened to drive by one day and saw him outside, you know, offering it all up to Allah. And he doesn't go there anymore. And which means we got to drive 15 miles to get gasoline. If this other, there's another gas station in town owned by a family, and hopefully they never go out of business, because getting gas for the lawnmower is going to be a real trip. But anyway, in such homage, loyalty to Jehovah forbade Daniel and his companions to join. Even a mere pretense of eating the food or drinking the wine would be a denial of their faith. To this would be to array themselves with heathenism and to dishonor the principles of the law of God. Nor dared they risk the inveterating effect of luxury and dissipation on physical, mental, and spiritual development. They were acquainted, and this is another reason for the health message, by the way. When you quit eating the things or smoking the things or drinking the things that you shouldn't be doing, you have a better, your brain's an organ just like any other organ. And so if you put things into your body that's going to cause issues like toxicity or whatever, or disease, your brain's going to get sick too, and you're not going to have the ability to use it the way it was designed to be used, and so the scriptures are going to be a little bit more difficult to understand. So she goes on, and let's see how far. Okay, I'll stop at the next here. It says, they were acquainted with the history of Nadab and Abihu, the record of those. Okay, what is? Okay, so they were acquainted with the history of Nadab and Abihu, the record of whose intemperance and its results have been preserved in the parchments of the Pentateuch, whatever. And they knew that their own physical and mental power would be injuriously affected by the use of wine. So there you have it, twofold. She's saying they can't drink the wine because it was offered up to an idol, and she's saying you can't drink the wine because it's going to injure you. And the only way it's going to injure you is if it's fermented. Physically injure you, that is. And so physical and mental. So she does mention the physical and mental there. So a lot of people will like to hang on her writings and take it out of context and say, look, she's only talking about it being offered up to idols. It's okay to drink wine. She's saying it right there. Well, just to read a little longer. But that's the way Rome works. And when Rome infiltrates the churches, those in those churches are going to use their methods to evangelize. And so... And the only reason we're cutting short today, we were talking about, well, it's up to you if you want me to continue, but we have something that we wanted to discuss. Brother Eli called me earlier in regards to an idea on how to put out some tracks in a lot bigger area for a lot cheaper And I guess it would be something that we might want to discuss. And we don't want to do this kind of stuff on Sabbath and stuff. So what do you think? Should we continue, or would you all want to talk about that thing with the new idea with the tracks? Let us have the discussion. Okay. Talk. Either way, all right. So let's end it here. So we'll end in prayer later. Okay? That way this whole thing can remain under his will. So let me shut down the recording here.